What's up, Core? My name is Josh. If we haven't met, I'm the Adult Ministries pastor here, and I get the privilege of finishing up, wrapping up this series that we have been in called The Good Work. And if I'm being honest, just to share a little bit of my heart with you, I was just sitting over there praying for everyone in this room, hoping that I'm not special in by any means, but what we talk about today, that there would just be one thing that would be helpful for you today, that as we walk out the doors, that we would be able to continue following God a little bit better today, and that something today would stand out, and that we would be able to take that away through our week as we leave here today. As we finish this series called The Good Work, we've been talking about this idea that God gives us each an individual purpose in our lives. That no matter what stage of life that we are in, we all have this opportunity laid out that God has set for us to follow him and to do great work. And what we know is that this great work is not limited to a job or a role or a title that we have, that like we go in and out every single day, 40 hours a week or more, and spend doing. That's not necessarily what our purpose is. And I struggle with that, especially when I was in high school. I feel like in high school, you're searching for what you want to do with your life. You're searching for the career that you want to have. And I was in that boat where I was like, I have no idea what I want to do. So senior year rolls around, and there is a test that we're going to take. Our guidance counselor, his name was Ed, was giving us this test to take, and it was supposed to tell us, you know, what category we would fall into. It was like a pie chart, so there's like a doctor, an artist, an engineer, a businessman, and I'm like, this test is going to tell me what I'm meant to do with my life. It's going to tell me where I'm supposed to be and what my purpose is. So I go into this test, I take it, Ed collects them. Ed was a really great guy. He had a super thick mustache, so as like a senior, I was like, I want to be like you someday. But he got our test, and he gave it back to me after he looked at it and got the results back, and I'm like, well, I don't know what this means, because all these options were here, but mine was in the middle. There is a section, and that's what was shaded. So I took it to him like, hey, Ed. I didn't call him Ed because he's my guidance counselor. I called him Mr. Clark. I said, Mr. Clark, what does this mean? Because it says 99 region. And he said, well, essentially, Josh, it means that you're like okay at all of these things, but you're not really like meant for any one of these. I said, thanks for telling me that I'm incredibly average in my life, that I'm not really like meant for anything. I'm like, appreciate it, Ed, jerk. But in that moment, I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go with my life? But now I know, and I hope we all know, that our purpose, especially in God's kingdom, is not limited to our jobs or our careers. In fact, it's so much bigger than that. In fact, we've been in this passage, in this book of Nehemiah, and we've been taking a look at his life and how much purpose that he had in his actions and in his story, in his individual circumstance. See, Nehemiah was a cupbearer. He was a cupbearer for the king, which essentially means he got to taste and drink all of the king's food and beverages before he had it to make sure it's not poisoned. Sometimes, I think my wife thinks she's my cupbearer because she takes a bite of my food every time we go out to a restaurant, and I look down and half of it's gone. I'm like, what the heck? That was supposed to be for me. But he was this cupbearer for the king, and this king conquered Israel. So Nehemiah was an Israelite living as a slave, working this job. But in Nehemiah's heart, he felt something stirring. He felt something stirring in his heart. He's like, hey, I'm feeling called to this. I feel like God is calling to this. So we talked about in the first week that he cried out to God, that he prayed to God, searching for direction in his life, searching for a path to follow. And God showed him where he needed to go. God was calling him to go back to the city of Jerusalem. Go back to the city of Jerusalem, this holy city that is central to so much that happens in the Bible and in the story that God is trying to tell us, and rebuild this wall and start to revitalize this city. So he goes to the king. The king finds favor with him. He grants it and says, all right, Nehemiah, you take your team. You go and rebuild this wall. So Nehemiah goes, begins to build this wall, begins to revitalize the city and bring it back to its former glory. Now, that doesn't mean that it was all smooth sailing from there. As Ben talked about last week, he faced some oppositions. Things got in his way, as they do with everything in our lives. When things are going really well, oftentimes we face a challenge or we face a roadblock, and we're guaranteed that struggles are going to happen in our lives. But he continues to do this good work. And I feel like this story of Nehemiah, as we have gone along chapter by chapter, we see this in his life and our lives too. That in following God and trying to find our purpose, we need to seek out and cry out to him. That we need to make a plan and act upon it, because we know that praying is a really good thing, but it's not enough. Because following Jesus calls us to do something about it. So in our lives, we have to cry out to God, but we also have to do something. We have to make a plan and act upon that when we're following God's purpose for our lives. And then we know that things are going to get in the way. Our lives are messy just like Nehemiah's. Things get in our way. We face roadblocks and obstacles that could dampen our moves. They could bring us down, but we have to keep going. We have to continue with the good work that God has for us. And I think here's what I want to just take a second and acknowledge, is that in Nehemiah's story, we've been focusing on this individual part of the Bible. We've been looking at this book that's in the entirety of the Bible, but it's so much bigger than that. Nehemiah's purpose we see in this one story, but when we look at the entire Bible, what we sometimes forget is from page one to the very last page of the Bible, there is a greater story that God is telling. There is a greater story that starts in the beginning, and it quite honestly goes past the last page of this book. We're still living in God's story. And Nehemiah falls into an important part. We look back and we see Abraham. He's considered like the father of Israel, the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. Abraham is entrusted, and God promises him a blessing. That as he moves forward, his line, his nation, his people, his land will be blessed. God promises a blessing to Abraham that for the rest of time, Abraham's nation will be blessed. So we go on and we see that walk down the line of Abraham's kids and his kids and their kids and their kids and their kids. The nation of Israel grows and grows and grows and becomes, honestly, this powerful force driven by the purpose that God has given them. Following God in every detail, or at least trying to. They get to a point where they get big enough where the people, against God's better judgment, ask for a king. Now God says, no, it's not good for you to have a king. You shouldn't have a king. I am your king. You don't need a king. But they're like, no, they're insisting. We need one. So God's like, okay, here's the king. So King Saul was the first king of Israel. And he did a little bit of good, probably more bad than good. But then David, and a lot of us have heard of King David, succeeded him as the king of Israel. And David was a great king. He was a man after God's own heart and did a lot of great work. But following David was a number of kings that was about 40 total. And almost every single one of those kings in Israel were bad, were wicked, were idolaters. They fled away from God, even though they are in this chosen nation. They fled away from God's purpose and did a lot of terrible things and led him in a really bad direction. So much to the point where it got to the direction that, hey, they couldn't go any further. They were so divided, they were so broken, and they were conquered by the Babylonians. And this is where we pick up this story, that Nehemiah falls right here, that he was an Israelite, or he's from the Israelite nation. They were conquered, put into slavery, and now the Babylonians rule over the Israelites. But we know the rest of the story. We know that 400 years down the line, that there's a baby that was born, and his name was Jesus. And Jesus walked this earth, did a lot of great stuff, but the center of Jesus' ministry was in Jerusalem. It's where he taught a bunch of people. It's where he made his triumphant return. It's where he was crucified and resurrected and then made appearances to a bunch of people. It's also where they broke off and started the church. So we now are 2,000 years later, and the church is everywhere. It's the reason we're sitting here today. We get to experience part of that, but it's because we rewind and look at the small part or large part that Nehemiah played in this grander story. Because there is his individual story. But we wouldn't be here today if Nehemiah didn't go back to the holy city of Jerusalem and revitalize it and create an opportunity that God had promised David that the Messiah would come through him. And I think that's really cool when we look at the greater purpose that God is laying out in our lives and is continuing to lay out in the history of the world. And we are a part of that. We get to say, okay, this story is not done yet. Our purpose is still continuing. Who knows the impact that we could have 10, 15, 20, 30, 100, 200 years down the line like Nehemiah did? It doesn't exclude us just because we're not written in the Bible. We have a great purpose that follows along with us, that God is laying along with us. But here's the catch, that if we consider ourselves Jesus' followers, this isn't an option. This is our responsibility. God lays us out and says, hey, if you consider yourself a follower of me, I absolutely love that, but responsibility comes with that. We are going to be a people that follows the good work of Jesus. We are going to be a people that does the good work. Because here's what's true, is that with great purpose comes great responsibility. For all my Spider-Man fans out there, I'm going to trademark that for me. But with great purpose comes great responsibility. Is that when we have this thing laid out in front of us, we are now responsible to carry it out. We are responsible to do the good work that God has laid out for us. But also, we know, and we talked about this a little last week, that with this responsibility, with this purpose, that there will be opposition, and there will be distractions, and there will be things that come into our lives that try to stop this good work, that's going to try to stop what we are meant to be doing in our lives. You know, we identify this as the enemy, Satan, sin, evil, the opposition that is going against us, is trying to get in our way, is trying to stop us from doing this good work. And here's what we need to know about the enemy, is the enemy is not God. The enemy does not have the power that God has. Satan cannot create things out of nothing. Satan is not all-knowing. He's not everywhere, all the time, and all-knowing. It's a tongue twister. He can't do that. He doesn't have the power of God. But what he does is he gets into the details of our lives. He seeps into the cracks of our lives and tries to distract us and pull us away from what is good and what is great and the path that God has for us. He tries to derail us, deceive us, and divide us. He wants to pull us away from the purpose that God has for us. And he's going to do that by any means necessary. Because we know that if our enemy can't destroy us, he will distract you. That's the first blank in your weekly. But if he can't destroy you, he will distract you. And that's not a threat. That's a promise. That's a guarantee. He will always be working against us, especially when we are desiring to do good work, when we're desiring to follow God. Here's the thing, is what I said earlier, with this responsibility that we have, he's going to try to distract us, but it's our responsibility to push through that. It's our responsibility to continue to follow God despite the distractions that we have in our lives. We know that the enemy tries to distract us. It's why I put my phone in the back, because I know that if my pocket buzzes when I'm up here, I'm going to get distracted and lose my train of thought. And we all feel this sometimes with our phone. It's constantly calling for our attention. It wants us to look at it. It wants us to check the news. It wants us to check Facebook to see what's going on. And lots of times that pulls us away from what's important in our lives. It pulls us away from maybe a place that we need to be if we're in it with a group of friends or with our family, and you know, we're having good conversation, but our phone buzzes, we are now disengaging and it's pulling us away. Little distractions like that. It's why we knock on wood when things are going really well, because we almost expect a distraction to come our way. We almost expect a distraction to pull us away from the good things that are going on. We all have felt this before when things enter into our lives and kind of mess up our circumstances. It's why sometimes we get tired at church and we doze off because we stayed up too late watching a football game, myself included. If I doze off, just yell at me. That would be really bad. But it's why we doze off, or it's why we start thinking about lunch, or it's why we start, what's next? What's in my week? What do I have to look forward to at church? It's because the enemy doesn't want us to pay attention. And that's the moment when I was younger, when I was sitting in service, I'd perk my head up and check around because I was a pastor's kid, and I'd be looking around to see if anyone noticed me because I'm supposed to be paying attention really well. I probably took too many naps on Sunday mornings when I was in church. But those distractions are the way that the enemy infiltrates our lives, that seeps into the cracks and pulls us away from what we're meant to be doing. And I think there are three main things that he tries to distract us with. That's not all of them, but I think three main ones that we can see pretty typically throughout our lives to pull our focus, pull our attention away from what truly matters. The first one is time. We all have time, but I don't know if we value time the way that we should, because time is a valuable asset. We only have a limited amount of time in each day and each week, and if we're not careful, our time can become unprioritized. We can focus on non-important things. If our schedules get so busy and so muddied that we don't have time for what's most important in our lives, the enemy will try to get into our time, try to fill up our schedule, try to make us so busy that we can't focus on what really matters and what's really important. The second thing is through lies. When we all know what that's like, to have lies about us or to believe lies or to have lies spreading around, that when we believe in things that aren't true, it changes our perspective and causes us to worry or have doubt or not really know what's going on, and it seeps into our lives and it takes away the trust that we have to have in people and in God. And our enemy is constantly trying to feed us lies like they don't like you or you're not good enough, trying to pull us off this track that God has for us. The third thing is fear. We all know what it's like to be afraid. We all know that things in our lives will cause us to worry and to fear and to run away and hide and try to catch us when we're not paying attention. Because when we're afraid, we oftentimes make quick, unwise decisions that hurt us as we move forward. I think these three things are three huge things that the enemy wants to instill in our lives to take us away from the path, from the purpose that God has for our lives, through our time, through lies, and through fear. And we see this in our lives, and Nehemiah in chapter 6 really lays out kind of what this looks like in sequence, in order. His enemies let go all of the roadblocks and hit him with all three of these things, trying to pull him away from this good work that we see in his life. So we're going to dig into that right now. So if you guys want to follow along, we'll be in chapter 6. And what I think is very interesting about this chapter and really the whole book is that Nehemiah wrote this book from his own perspective. Now, it was after the cause, but he adds his own, I guess, attitude or his own perspective in the way that he's writing this. And I think it adds a little bit of humor, but also intentionality to it. So it says in verse 1, Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of the enemies found out that I had finished rebuilding the wall and that no gaps remained, though we had not yet set up the doors in the gates. You see, I highlighted that word enemies because early on in this process, Nehemiah looks out and says, okay, I have identified my enemies. It's these guys and the other people that are with them. Those are the people who are against me. Those are the people who I know are battling against me, that they are not fighting for me. They're trying to stop me in this good work. As he's kind of wrapping up, he's like, okay, I've identified these. And I think that's important for our lives too. As we look out and as we're doing good things, we need to realize, okay, who's against me? Who's against me? Who's trying to stop me from accomplishing God's good work? It goes on to say, so Sanballat and Geshem sent a message asking me to meet them at one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But I realized that they were plotting to harm me. They're plotting to harm me, his enemies. So he recognized this. He recognized who his enemies were, and he recognized what their intentions were. They wanted to harm him. They wanted to stop him from doing something really, really good. So, dot, 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 he did it. He went and met with him. He went and met with them, even though he knew they were trying to harm him, even though he knew they were his enemies, he said, okay, I'm just going to go. No, of course he didn't do that, because he identified it. He knew what situation he was in, and he knew where he needed to go. It said, I replied by sending this message to them. I am engaged in a great work, so I can't come. Why should I stop working to come and meet with you? He says, no, I'm engaged. He's like, I recognize that you are trying to pull my attention away. That you're trying to pull my focus away. You're trying to steal my time. You're trying to steal my priorities. But I am in this good work, and I'm not coming down. I'm going to see this through to completion. I'm not going to stop. He essentially, it says, I highlighted can't, because he essentially says, no, I will not do that. I will not come down. You cannot take my time. No, you can't do that. It says, four times they sent the same message, and each time I gave them the same reply. They were persistent. His enemy was persistent. They kept coming at him, but he said, no, I won't do it. And I think our no, just like Nehemiah's no, is a valuable word that we don't often take advantage of a lot. A lot of times, if you're like me, I'm a little passive. I don't like to be aggressive. I don't like to say no a lot. A lot of times I'll say like, oh, if someone offers an invitation or tries to say, hey, let's get together, or let's do this or let's do that. You know, and I'm like, well, five nights of my week are already taken up. But maybe, we'll see if we can fit it in. I give them like a gentle response like, yeah, maybe we might be able to do that. But the reality is that our time is valuable. And in order to protect that, in order to protect our time, we have to say no to some things that it might not be able to, that might not be easy, especially when we identify that something is trying to distract us or pull us away. Now, the reality of our lives is when we look at things, it's not always going to be straightforward, clear cut. These are our enemies, like in this story. But we have to pay attention to things that if people or events or things aren't in our best interest, that we need to evaluate them. We need to just check them out and say, okay, is this really what's best for me? Is this really where I need to go? Or is this really just taking my time? Or is this really just okay, but it's not the best way that I can be spending my time? Because what's important is our families and our closest friends and our relationship with God. And if things are pulling our attention and our focus away from that constantly, then we need to be hesitant to say yes. And maybe we need to say no. Because the reality is if you are always available to everyone, eventually you'll have nothing to give to anyone. And when you have nothing to give to anyone, then the people who need you the most are going to be left wanting more, and they're not going to be fulfilled in that relationship, and you're not going to be honoring the duties that you have in your life. To your family, to your friends, to God. So we need to be careful of how we manage our time and not to let the enemy distract us and fill up every second of every day with stuff to do. We can't neglect what is important. And like I said earlier, if you mean no, if you have to say no, don't say maybe. This is your free pass. Don't say maybe. It's okay. You should still be gentle. You should still be kind. But it's okay to be straightforward. It's okay to say no. It's okay to decline an invitation knowing that maybe sometimes things are not so great. Maybe sometimes things are good that you have to say no to in order to say yes to the great things, to the best things, to the things that God has for our lives. So just like Nehemiah did, it's important to guard our time and pay attention to who's trying to steal it from us. We go on to say, in the next section, the fifth time Sanballat's servant came with an open letter in his hand, and this is what it said. So they didn't stop it four times. They came a fifth time to try to distract him, to try to pull him away. This is what it says. There is a rumor among the surrounding nations, and Geshem tells me it is true, that you and the Jews are planning to rebel, and that is why you are building the wall. According to his reports, you plan to be their king. He knew that this was a rumor. We've all been on one side or another of a rumor. We all know that lots of times a rumor is fully true, maybe, likely not, partially true or completely untrue. And rumors get spread around so fast, and a lot of times they're telling lies about us or lies about other people. And they come into our lives and they distort our view of truth and what is true about people and what is true about God. And it can do a lot of damage in our lives. So Nehemiah says, okay, there's a rumor. I recognize that. I wrote this down. I realized this was a rumor. They're trying to spread the lie that I'm taking advantage of this opportunity. I'm not just trying to build a wall because I know it's the right thing to do. I'm trying to build a wall so I can establish a kingdom of my own. They're thinking I'm trying to build a wall so I can become king and separate from the Babylonians and rebuild this Israelite nation. He's like, no, I'm not trying to do that. That's a rumor. That's a lie. I don't believe that. And I'm not going to give in. It goes on to say, he also reports that you have appointed prophets in Jerusalem to proclaim about you. Look, there is a king in Judah. You can be very sure that this report will get back to the king, so I suggest that you come and talk it over with me. He's like, listen, not only are you weaseling your way in to be a king, but you're building up a little group over here and sending them out to tell everyone else, like, hey, this guy's going to be the king. It's like that moment where you're like, okay, there's lies maybe about me, and that's okay. I can deal with that. But the enemy takes it one step further and says, okay, not only is there a lie, but there's an exaggeration of the lie on top of the lie. They've taken it so far to explain and try to deceive Nehemiah and try to pull him away by lying to him. But he knows. He said, I know this is a rumor. I know this isn't true. I still know that you're my enemy, and I know that you're trying to steal me away from this good work that I'm doing. It finishes out in this section. It says, so I continued the work with even greater determination. It's like, you can try to pull me away, but that's just going to make me go and work harder. That's going to make me more determined and less likely to stop my work, to take breaks. I'm going to get it done faster. I'm going to do it better. And I'm going to fulfill this role that God has set out for me. He's like, no, you're not going to stop me. In fact, you're going to make me push harder. And I think that's something that we can all learn from. Because the reality that we face is that lies in our life, if we give them the opportunity to have power over us, not necessarily only because they're true or because people are spreading them about you, but in our minds, we oftentimes form narratives about other people. We ask questions even when nothing's being talked about, even when nothing's going on. I look at people all the time and think, what are you thinking about me? I like to be liked. I want people to like me. I want people to accept me. I want to be good enough for people. So I look out and I try to think, like, what are they thinking about me? And if I'm not careful, the lie in my head will tell me, well, they don't really like you. They don't think you're good enough. And the lies don't only exist in other people about us, but they also exist in our hearts and our minds. And we have to be careful. We have to check this with what is true. We have to analyze it and question, okay, is this actually true about us? Is what other people are saying about me actually true? Is this going to help me? Or is this just holding power over me and stopping me from doing what I'm meant to be doing? And I think we can follow Nehemiah and say, no, these are lies. I won't follow these. In fact, I'm going to go even more determined into the work that God has for me, even more determined into the good work that he has set in front of me. I think before we move on, I just want to put two caveats on that and talk about what that kind of means for us. And as we go out, is one, like I said, we all encounter this, but if you're anything like me, we like to talk. We like to spread news. We like to spread stories. We like to communicate. It's not always a bad thing, but we oftentimes contribute to rumors and contribute to gossip and contribute to drama. And I know that sometimes when someone says something like that, like we do, you think of someone else. But for a moment, let's think about ourselves and say, okay, am I taking care of the people that I'm talking about? Am I actually thinking about them? Am I actually caring about them and what's good for them and what God wants for them? Or am I creating lies that are partially true about someone else that might hurt someone? Because we know that in Shelby, in a small town Rumors and lies spread like wildfire because everyone knows everyone. And it's not hard for things to circulate around and for everyone to know. If you tell one person, who knows how many people will come out for that? So we need to guard that responsibility. We need to guard that responsibility of taking care of other people when we talk about others and when we potentially have the opportunity to spread rumors. And the second thing is that we can't always play the victim card in this. Lies aren't always being told about us. Sometimes we fall. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we sin. Sometimes we mess up. And that's okay. But if you think that a lie is being told about you, maybe it's important to evaluate that and just make sure, hey, am I actually doing something wrong? Am I actually being hurtful? Am I listening to the wise voices in my life? Do I have people around in my life to tell me when I'm being unwise or when I'm actually messing up? It's important to pay attention to lies, but also not use lies that other people might say as a crutch. Because that then leads us into a victim mindset, and we don't want that. That's not any better than believing lies itself. So Nehemiah and us, we all face this aspect of time and of lies that the enemy is trying to work against us. In this third section, we see this like last idea of fear come into play. It comes back around. He says, later I went to visit Shemaiah, son of Delilah, and grandson of Medabel. Sometimes I wish that names in the Bible were just like John or Dave. It would make it my job a lot easier than trying to pronounce Medabel. But anyway, who was confirmed to his home, he said, let us meet together inside the temple of God and bolt the doors shut. Your enemies are coming to kill you tonight. His proposal is saying, hey, they're coming to kill you. There's a threat coming against you, Nehemiah. Your enemies are coming to get you. Let's go into the temple, bolt the doors shut, and then we'll be safe. But what Nehemiah knew, what we know, is that he holds special privileges. He's not a king, but he is leading this charge in rebuilding the city. So he has the privilege to go into the temple and protect himself. But he knew that if he did that, he'd be abusing his power. He would be taking advantage of something that he wasn't supposed to be taking advantage of. And people would notice, and people would see, well, maybe Nehemiah is trying to be the king. Maybe he is plotting something. And what Nehemiah does next, I think, is something we can all learn from. He says, but I replied, should someone in my position run from danger? Question mark. Should someone in my position enter the temple to save his life? Question mark. No, I won't do it. I won't. He took this opportunity when fear faced him dead in the eyes, and he said, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to move too quick. I'm going to take a step back and see the whole landscape. I'm going to ask a couple questions. I'm going to try to understand the situation so I don't make the unwise decision. And when he asks these questions, he realized something. He figured it out. He understood the situation better. It says, I realized that God had not spoken to him, but that he had uttered this prophecy against me because of Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. They were hoping to intimidate me and make me sin. Then they would be able to accuse me and discredit me. He knew. He saw that because he didn't react. And I think that's probably harder than we think it is. It's harder to say, okay, there's fear confronting me right in the face. I'm not gonna move quickly. I'm not gonna react. It's why when we watch a scary movie and we're in the movies or at home, when there's a jump scare, we still jump. Every single time. At least most of us do. I do. Because we don't have time to think about it. Even though we know it's coming, we don't have time to think about it. And it comes up so fast that it scares us. And our natural reaction is to jump. It's why maybe you as parents, if you have kids in the room, get angry when your child breaks the rule or stays out past curfew or does something he's not supposed to. The reality is that you just care for them. You want them to be safe. You don't want them to find their way into trouble. But it comes out as anger because that's the reaction that you have. Instead of slowing down and realizing, hey, I just care about you. And I'm not actually angry, but that's my reaction. I'm afraid, and I want you to be safe. Maybe it's the situation that you're in either at your job or at church or anywhere else in life where you're presented with an opportunity. You're presented with a promotion or a new job. You're presented with this opportunity to join a group or to start serving at church, to take a next step. But the reality is that that's unknown, and no one likes the unknown. And when we think too much about the unknown, we get afraid. We fear, and we're like, okay, I'm just going to stay comfortable. I'm here. I'm okay. I don't need to move. My life's comfortable. I don't need to take that next step. And our first reaction is fear. And when we do that quickly, we might miss out on an opportunity, or we might go down the wrong path, or we might be derailed from what God has for us. And we need to be careful and to follow in Nehemiah's lead and ask a couple questions. Get the whole picture. That way, we don't make unwise, rash decisions that lead us into a place where we don't want to be. Instead, we can make wise, fully informed decisions to make the best choices for our lives that lead us to continue God's work so the enemy doesn't use fear to derail us from the purpose that God has for us. You see, we cannot let fear and worry set the direction of our lives. Because when we do that, we are giving the enemy an opportunity to divide us, to derail us, and distort the message that God is giving to us. The message, the direction that he wants us to follow. We cannot let fear and worry guide the direction of our life. Instead, we have to let hope and joy and the work of Jesus lead the direction of our life so that we can make the wise decisions, so that we can fight against fear and we can fight against lies and we can fight against the fight for our time. Nehemiah faced all those things in consecutive order. And I feel like, if you're anything like me, that you've probably faced all those things too. If not on a weekly basis, maybe even a daily basis. We all face those struggles. We all face those temptations, the enemy trying to pull us off track. And that's where it leaves us. That's where we have the decision to make. And the bottom line for today is that we will face distraction, but we must choose to continue with God's good work. Distractions are inevitable. They're going to happen every single day of our lives. They will never stop, especially when we're doing good work, because opposition is at its highest. Distractions are at its highest when we are doing something good, when we are following God the way that he wants us to. But we must, we go back to that beginning, the responsibility that we have, we must choose to follow in God's good work. We have to. It's not an option. We have to fight against distractions. We have to push forward and have to continue what God has for us, has for me, and has for you in our lives. This is maybe my favorite part about this chapter, the last section, because I think you really see Nehemiah's personality come out. I imagine him saying this because he's essentially talking to God, and he's recapping all that has happened in this chapter. And I just imagine him sitting in a comfortable chair, having a conversation with God, maybe having a drink and eating some good food, reminiscing on his cupbearer days. And he says this to God. He says, "Remember, oh my God, all the evil things that Tobiah and Sanballat have done. And remember Nodiah the prophet and all the prophets like her who have tried to intimidate me." Remember, oh my God. He's reflecting over this. He's like, remember those times, God, where they tried to distract me? Remember those times where they tried to get in my life and they tried to pull me off course? Remember that time? Remember that time they tried to? Remember that, oh God? Goes on to say, so on October 2nd, the wall was finished, just 52 days after we had begun. When our enemies and the surrounding nations heard about it, they were frightened and humiliated. It's funny how that works. that when the enemy was working hard to distract Nehemiah, the story got flipped on them. And instead of him being distracted, frightened, and humiliated, the enemy was frightened and humiliated. That when we follow in God's good work, we see at the end of the story, at the end of a time in our life, at the end of something that's challenging, goodness and faithfulness on God's behalf. When we stick to the good work that God has for us, we see great things happen. And he finishes out to say, he says, they realized this work had been done with the help of God. When the enemy sees that your work has been done with the help of God, they run and hide. They believe that they can't stop us. They believe that they can't take our time. And that's what they realized about Nehemiah. As he worked and continued to work and persevered harder to fulfill this work that God had for him. Remember, oh my God, all the things that they tried to do. I think each and every one of us can say that. I think each and every one of us could have the opportunity to say, remember, God, the time that they tried to bring me down? I'm not going to let them because I have your help. I have you behind me. And what I think is really cool is that each and every one of us have this opportunity to do immeasurably more with the help of God. When we look back at what we were talking about in the grander story that God is playing, who knows what our purpose, what our lives, what our work could attribute to down the road? Who knows if we could be a cause for someone else to come to Christ or for the city of Shelby to get a little bit better? Imagine a community where each and every one of us take this responsibility seriously and despite distractions, despite opposition, continue to do good work. I think we all want to live in that community. I know I do. I know we want our kids to live in that community and grow up here. And I think that's the community, that's the type of place that God desires us to live in and to live out. And I think that's what the good work that God has for us could result in if we take that responsibility personally and if we go forward knowing that there will be distractions, but knowing that we have done it with the help of God. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for today. I thank you for this opportunity, God, to, Lord, read your word, to see this great story that Nehemiah has, and I pray that we would all be able to relate to it, to understand that things aren't always easy and things aren't always handed to us on a silver platter, but God, that you give us the tools and equip us to persevere through distractions and through the enemy's attempts to bring us down. God, would you allow us to go out and not just let this be a Sunday thing, but every week that we would go into the workplace and go into our everyday lives and realize the purpose that you have for us and realize what that could mean this week, this month, for the rest of the story that you are telling with our lives. God, we are grateful to be a part of it and pray that we could recognize that always. God, we love you. It's in your name we pray.